The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in, well, a topic that honestly touches every single part of our lives, sleep.
That's right. We're diving into Matthew Walker's really important book, Why We Sleep.
Yeah, and I have to say, this is one of those reads that genuinely makes you rethink your entire day, your whole schedule.
It's huge because it fundamentally challenges this core idea we have in modern life.
That sleep is optional.
Exactly. For decades, society's kind of treated sleep as just passive downtime, or worse, something you can easily cut back on when you get busy.
Right, a luxury.
But Walker argues pretty forcefully that this is not just scientifically wrong, it's actually dangerous.
He talks about this silent sleep loss epidemic, doesn't he? He frames it not just as like an inconvenience.
No, not at all. He says it's one of the biggest public health challenges we're facing right now. It's not just about feeling a bit tired.
Yeah, and think about it this way. He puts it really clearly. We often talk about diet and exercise as the pillars of health, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Walker says sleep isn't just the third pillar. It's the actual foundation, the non-negotiable base that everything else relies on.
Absolutely. Without enough good sleep, even your best diet, your hardest workouts, they just won't work as well. They can't perform optimally.
So who is this expert? The guy who sort of shook the world awake about needing rest?
Well, Matthew Walker, he's a real heavy hitter in sleep science. He's a British-American neuroscientist, professor over UC Berkeley.
And he founded the Center for Human Sleep Science there too, right?
That's the one. And what gives his message so much weight, I think, is that he's not just, reporting on the science. He's actively doing it, creating it.
Ah, okay. So he's a researcher himself.
Definitely. PhD in neurophysiology, published well over 100 papers. He spent more than 20 years really architecting this field.
So he's translating all that complex brain stuff into something, urgent and understandable for all of us.
Precisely. And you really feel that authority in the book. It's not just some generic self-help guide.
No, it feels very evidence-based, a detailed argument that sleep is like a biological must, not optional.
He really moves past just anecdotes and brings serious science to something we often just dismisses, common sense.
Right, or intuitive.
Exactly. It takes us from the what, like, okay, we feel better after sleep, to the deep why. Why did evolution keep this state where we're basically unconscious and vulnerable for hours every night?
Yeah, the functions must be incredibly valuable to outweigh those risks.
They have to be.
Okay, let's dig into the core idea then. The book's goal seems pretty ambitious. It wants to completely change how we see rest, define it as non-negotiable.
Yeah, it's trying to revolutionize our perception. It's part deep science exploration, part, honestly, an urgent public health warning.
And the scope, it's kind of terrifying how comprehensive it is. Walker shows that chronic sleep deprivation, regularly getting less than that, recommended 7 to 9 hours.
Which is so many people.
Right. It's linked to almost every major disease we worry about today. Alzheimer's risk goes up, certain cancers, heart disease, diabetes, serious mental health issues.
The list just goes on.
And here's the bit that really grabs you, I think. He says being sleep deprived impairs your cognitive function to a level comparable to being legally drunk.
Wow. That's stark.
It really is. It makes you think. It's a massive scientific mistake for our culture to sort of incentivize or even just tolerate people operating like that all the time.
Yeah, it forces you to ask, are you really being productive if your brain is working like someone who's had a few drinks? The science says pretty emphatically, no.
Okay, let's get into the nuts and bolts. If sleep's that important, how does it even work? How's it regulated? Walker explains there are two main things controlling our sleep-wake cycle. First up is the circadian rhythm.
Right, the circadian rhythm. That's basically your body's internal 24-hour clock.
Yeah.
It tells you when to be alert, when to feel sleepy, kind of regardless of how long you've actually been awake.
Like the conductor of the orchestra, he calls it.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And it's mainly tuned by light. External light cues are key. That feeling of jet lag, that's you literally fighting your internal conductor's schedule.
Okay, makes sense. And the second big regulator is something called sleep pressure. This one I found really interesting, the chemical side of it.
Mm-hmm. It's based on accumulation. Basically, every moment you're awake, your brain is producing this chemical called adenosine.
Adenosine, got it.
And the longer you stay awake, the more of it builds up. That buildup increases the pressure, the need to sleep, And sleep is the only thing that really effectively clears it out.
Ah, and that's where caffeine pulls its trick, right?
Exactly. Caffeine is like a chemical imposter. It doesn't actually get rid of the adenosine.
It just hides it.
It binds to the adenosine receptors in your brain, blocking the sleepiness signal from getting through. So you feel less tired. But the underlying sleep debt, it's still there, just waiting for the caffeine to wear off. Then it hits you.
Okay, so once we do finally give in and fall asleep, we cycle between two different kinds of sleep. What's that first one, the really deep restorative phase early in the night?
That's NREM sleep, non-rapid eye movement sleep. Specifically, the deepest stages, sometimes called slow wave sleep.
NREM, and what's its main job?
Well, it's vital for physical repair, but cognitively, it's like the brain's filing system. It's crucial for memory consolidation. This is when your brain replays information learned during the day.
Like studying for a test.
Exactly. And it moves that information from the short-term holding area, the hippocampus, into more permanent long-term storage in the cortex.
And this links back to that scary connection with cognitive decline, right? What else is deep sleep doing beyond just memory filing? Why is it maybe our best defense against something like Alzheimer's?
This is probably one of the book's most startling points. During that deep NREM sleep, the brain activates this amazing cleaning system. Scientists call it the glymphatic system.
Glymphatic system, like plumbing.
Kind of. Think of it like the brain's overnight dishwasher cycle. It actively rinses out metabolic waste products that build up while we're awake, and critically, it flushes out beta amyloid.
Which is that toxic protein linked to Alzheimer's.
Precisely. So not enough deep sleep means not enough cleaning. That directly lets that toxic gunk build up faster.
Wow. Okay, that is a huge motivator to get the full 8 hours. Then later in the night, we shift more into REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep.
Yep, REM sleep. That's when we typically dream vividly. REM isn't so much about consolidating facts, it's more about integrating information, regulating emotions.
And creativity.
Yes, and creative problem solving. The brain makes these novel connections between different ideas during REM. It's probably why you sometimes sleep on a problem and genuinely wake up with a new insight or solution.
So if you cut your sleep short, maybe waking up super early for the gym or work, you're mostly sacrificing that REM sleep.
Disproportionately, yes. You tend to get more REM later in the sleep cycle. So cutting sleep short means less of that crucial emotional balancing and creative thinking time.
Which explains why Walker totally debunks the whole all-nighter myth for studying or working.
Oh, completely. He shows you need sleep before learning to kind of prepare the brain to soak up new information.
Right. Make space.
And then you desperately need sleep after learning to actually lock it in, consolidate it. Practice plus sleep equals perfect. Practice plus exhaustion just means you won't remember it anyway.
We've talked cognitive impact, but what about the emotional side? We all know we get grumpy when tired, but what's actually happening inside? Why so volatile?
Well, when you're sleep deprived, the brain's emotional hub, the amygdala, it becomes hyperreactive. Walker cites research showing something like a 60% amplification in its reactivity.
60%. That's huge.
It is. It's like your emotional accelerator is jammed on, and the brakes, normally handled by the prefrontal cortex, which also suffers from sleep loss, aren't working well. Small annoyances feel huge. Irritability, anxiety, emotional swings. It all ramps up. Your emotional control system needs REM sleep.
Okay, mind covered. What about our body's defenses? The immune system stuff in the book was, frankly, pretty jarring.
Yes, some of those stats are genuinely shocking. Like this one, just a single night of restricted sleep, say only 4 or 5 hours.
Which happens.
Right. That one night can slash the activity of your natural killer cells by 70%.
70. And those are the cells that fight off potential cancer cells and viruses.
Exactly. They're a key part of your immune surveillance. So that single bad night significantly weakens your body's first line of defense against illness.
Wow. And for heart health, he uses that daylight saving time example, right? Like a giant natural experiment.
It's such a clear illustration, isn't it? Every spring, when millions lose just 1 hour of sleep, studies consistently show hospital data reveals about a 24% spike in heart attacks the next day.
24% from 1 hour.
And then, in the autumn, when we gain an hour back, heart attacks drop by around 21%. That tiny change in sleep duration has an immediate, measurable impact on cardiovascular events. It's dramatic proof.
And we can't forget metabolism either. I mean, everyone's felt that craving for junk food when they're exhausted. It's not just in your head, is it?
Not at all. It's pure biology. Hormones. Lack of sleep throws your key appetite-regulating hormones totally out of whack.
Ghrelin and leptin.
That's them. Ghrelin, the hunger hormone, goes up. leptin, the I'm full hormone, goes down. So your brain is getting signals saying, eat more, and you're still hungry all the time.
Leading to craving high-calorie stuff.
Yep. And on top of that, it messes with your body's insulin sensitivity, making it harder to manage blood sugar. It dramatically increases the risk for both obesity and type 2 diabetes over time.
Okay, let's try and pull these threads together. What are the absolute core messages we need to take away? Theme one, sleep is foundational, not just another healthy habit.
Right. It's the bedrock.
Yeah.
So if you're, say, struggling with fitness goals or trying to manage your weight, the book really suggests don't just push harder or restrict calories more aggressively. First, honestly check your sleep. Is it consistent? Is it sufficient?
Because if the foundation's weak, nothing else will really work properly.
Exactly.
Okay. Theme two, the cultural stigma is dangerous. Walker really goes after this hustle culture idea that equates lack of sleep with, I don't know, ambition or toughness.
Yeah, and he calls it a profound societal error, wearing sleep deprivation like a badge of honor. It's essentially boasting about being functionally impaired cognitively and physically.
Right. Real productivity, real creativity, optimal health, they require adequate sleep. We need to shift focus from just being present to actually being effective.
We really do.
Theme three, dreams aren't just random noise. We often dismiss them, but Walker argues REM sleep, dreaming, serves a real purpose. He calls it overnight therapy.
That's such a powerful idea. During REM, the brain processes emotional experiences, even difficult or traumatic ones. But crucially, it does this in a neurochemical environment where the main stress chemical, noradrenaline, is suppressed.
So it can process the memory without the intense emotional sting.
Kind of, yeah. It helps to sort of file the memory away without the raw emotional charge attached. It's like emotional first aid while you sleep, helping you manage mental health night after night.
That's incredible. And finally, theme four, we need systemic change. Just telling individuals to sleep better isn't enough to fix a public health crisis.
Absolutely. Walker is a big advocate for policy changes. He talks a lot about, for example, later school start times for teenagers.
Because their body clocks naturally shift later during adolescence.
Exactly. Their circadian rhythm pushes them towards being night owls. Forcing them into a 7 a.m. school start is like asking an adult to start work at 4 a.m. It guarantees widespread sleep deprivation and hurts learning.
Yeah.
We need systems in schools, in workplaces that actually respect our biology.
The book is just packed with these really potent quotes, backed by all that evidence. Let's share a few that really stick. How about this one? Sleep is the single most effective thing we can do to reset our brain and body health each day. Mother Nature's best effort yet at contra-death.
Ooh, I love that phrase, contra-death. It reframes sleep completely. It's not passive surrender. It's an active, evolved strategy for, well, fighting off decay and extending healthy life. It's preventative medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. Then there's the stark one. The shorter your sleep, the shorter your life.
That just hits hard, doesn't it? It's the blunt summary of decades of research.
Yeah.
Consistently getting less than about 7 hours significantly increases your risk of dying younger from all sorts of major diseases. It's a direct link.
No ambiguity there. And finally, just hammering home the sheer breadth of its impact. No aspect of our biology is left unscathed by sleep deprivation.
Yeah, that's kind of the mic drop. It says it all. Immune system, metabolism, heart health, mood, concentration, memory, creativity. You name it, not getting enough sleep messes with it. Nothing is untouched.
So, okay, for everyone listening, what are the most practical, real-life things we can actually do starting tonight based on all this science?
Well, the number one thing, the absolute bedrock, according to Walker, is regularity. Consistency, going to bed and waking up at roughly the same time every single day.
Even on weekends, that's the killer.
Especially on weekends, ideally. That regularity anchors your internal circadian rhythm like nothing else. It tells your body when to expect sleep.
Okay, regularity. What about the bedroom itself?
Right, optimizing the environment. Three key things. It needs to be dark, really dark. No little flashing lights from gadgets.
Yeah.
It needs to be gadget-free. Ideally, no phones or tablets in the bedroom. And crucially, it needs to be cool.
Cool temperature. How cool.
He recommends around 65 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 18.5 Celsius. Your body's core temperature needs to drop slightly to initiate and maintain deep sleep. A warm room makes that difficult.
Makes sense. We also have to talk about, the things we consume. Caffeine is obvious, but what about alcohol? Many people think it helps them sleep.
Yeah, that's a huge misconception. Alcohol might sedate you, knock you out faster. But Walker explains it's terrible for sleep quality. It powerfully suppresses REM sleep.
So no overnight therapy, no emotional processing.
Exactly. And it leads to fragmented sleep throughout the night, even if you don't fully wake up. You wake up feeling groggy and unrefreshed despite having been asleep for hours.
And sleeping pills get a critique too, right? Not natural sleep.
Generally, yes.
Yep.
He argues many common sleeping pills induce sedation. Not true. Naturalistic sleep, with all its complex cycles and benefits.
Okay, last tip maybe. What if you're lying there, wide awake, just getting stressed about not sleeping?
Ah, yes, the classic insomnia spiral. His advice is actually counterintuitive. If you've been awake in bed for about 20 minutes or so, get out of bed.
Really, get up.
Yeah. Go to another room. Keep the lights dim. Do something quiet and relaxing. Read a boring book. Gentle stretching. Listen to calm music. Only return to bed when you actually feel sleepy again. The goal is to break that mental association between your bed and the feeling of frustrated wakefulness.
That makes sense. Don't teach your brain that bed is a place to worry.
Precisely.
Okay, wrapping up, what was the biggest takeaway or the most surprising thing for you from diving back into this?
For me, I think it's still that incredibly specific link between deep NREM sleep and the lymphatic system clearing out beta amyloid. Just understanding that mechanical brainwashing process really drives home how sleep isn't just rest, it's active maintenance, maybe our best daily defense against cognitive decline later in life. That really lands.
Yeah, I agree. For me, it's the whole reframing. The idea that prioritizing sleep isn't lazy or unproductive, it's actually the most productive thing you can do. It's the ultimate act of self-care, but also strategic self-preservation for your mind and body. It just flips the script on societal pressure.
It really does. It empowers you to say, no, my sleep is non-negotiable. So maybe a final thought for everyone listening. As you finish hearing this, maybe just consider, what's one small change you could make to your technology use tonight? Maybe putting the phone away an hour earlier. Just one thing to help protect your melatonin and honor your need for sleep.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.